Shakespeare may not be the first thing this music brings to mind, but the Public Theater's latest Shakespeare in the Park production, a fast-paced musical version of Love's Labor's Lost, captures the spirit of the play in a way that brings it squarely into the 21st century. It's on stage at the Delacorte Theater in Central Park until August 18th, and I'm very pleased to welcome the show's composer and lyricist, Michael Friedman, to our show, along with one of its cast members, Rachel Dratch, who plays the scholar Holofernes. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Michael, you're no stranger to Shakespeare in the Park. Didn't you work on Romeo and Juliet and Cymbeline?
I did. This is actually my fourth production in the park. My first job when I moved to New York City was music directing Cymbeline in 1998, which is a long time ago now. And then I did that Seagull that Mike Nichols did with Meryl Streep and Kevin Kline and Everyone Famous on Earth. And then Romeo and Juliet with that beautiful Michael Greif production with Lauren Ambrose and Oscar Isaac. So I've been lucky to get to work in the Delacorte a lot.
But this is the first time you've written a full musical adaptation of one of Shakespeare's plays.
It's true. It's the first time I've gotten to do something like that.
Did it grow out of your collaboration with Alex Chambers on Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson, which premiered at the Public?
Well, Alex and I, when Bloody Bloody was happening, I think it was during its production at the Newman Theater at the Public, we were talking about what our next collaboration should be, and I think we toyed with a lot of different, I think, terrible ideas, and then we finally were trying to come up with something that was as far from Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson as possible, and a Shakespeare romantic comedy seemed like probably that thing.
Rachel, most people know you from your seven seasons on Saturday Night Live, on 30 Rock, other TV shows. But you were here last year to talk about your book, Girl Walks Into a Bar.
Yes, I was.
So I got the feeling that you were thinking of becoming a full-time writer.
Oh, well, I'm still toying with writing things. But, you know, Shakespeare in the Park has been on my sort of dream list for so long that when I got the call, I was just like, oh, I couldn't believe it. So, yeah, I still enjoy performing, for sure.
Have you done any theater before?
Yeah, I mean, I started in theater. I started out in Chicago with Second City and everything. So theater was the first thing I really did.
And what about musicals?
Musicals. Well, high school I did musicals. And then I've been involved in a couple things that, you know, almost went to Broadway. But I usually play – in this one, you know, I don't really sing that much. I sing one little line, which is probably good for the viewing public. Yeah.
Did the producers come to you, or did you audition for it?
It was one of those weird things where I just got this random phone call one day, like, you have an offer to do Shakespeare in the Park. And I was flipping out because that was, like I said, you know, on my dream list.
Michael, who makes those decisions as to whether to call Rachel or somebody else?
I mean, this came from Alex and me. The role of Holofernes is a particularly difficult one because it's a sort of funny parody of an academic. And it's famously not that funny in the writing. And so we, in casting Holofernes and Nathaniel, we were like, we have to find people who will make this funny. And so when we sort of thought of Rachel and Jeff Hiller, who plays Nathaniel opposite her, it was like, oh, finally, this might work. And it's been so amazing because it's so much more delightful and joyous, their performances, than I think we even expected. So it's been we give ourselves lots of pats on the back for our clever thoughts of casting.
Holofernes is generally played by an older man. In your mind, are you doing it as a male or a female?
Well, it's so funny because there's all these lines in there that are like, sir, and you're the arts man. And I've never even asked, like, am I a guy or a girl? I'm just like, oh, just go with it. So I think in my mind, I'm a woman. That's my name of my next book,
yeah,
by the way.
You end up with the sort of surfer guy, you know.
They did a funny little twist at the end. Oh, yeah, so that's true. I am a girl, aren't I? I have a history of playing dudes, though, so I didn't even bat an eye about that. But it's funny, though, because I am with Jeff Hiller, who's like 6'5", and I'm 5'1". And we are just kind of this goofy pair. Like, as soon as I saw him, I was like, oh, this is already funny. We don't even have to open our mouths.
Now, Michael, were you inspired by the musical version of Two Gentlemen of Verona by John Guare and Gail McDermott?
Yeah,
that premiered in 1971.
Yeah, it's the last time.
Revived at the Delacorte in 2000.
But it's the last time they've premiered a new Shakespeare musical in the park. So Alex and I were both very inspired by that. I think especially by, I mean, John Guare and Galt, they're both such geniuses. And the kind of way that they both respected the text and also took enormous liberties with it and sort of felt free to do that, I think opened us up to both use Shakespeare and sometimes
do what we wanted to do.
Do you think that Shakespeare might have included songs in some of his comedies when they were first performed?
Well, I mean, certainly. I mean, Twelfth Night has so many songs in it that it virtually feels like a musical already, and As You Like It. This show has, at the end, The Owl and the Cuckoo, the song we do, and that's in the play. So, I mean, I think Shakespeare in almost every one of his comedies includes a pop song or two or even four or five. So I think this... the addition of more songs, it does go back to a technique that Shakespeare used himself.
So you think Shakespeare might have invented the musical comedy?
I think it's pretty clear that he invented the musical comedy.
Because I can't imagine Euripides including songs in his plays. Medea, I just met a girl named Medea.
Oh, you're terrible. But I think Twelfth Night... I think Twelfth Night really does initiate the modern musical comedy. I think so much of what we do still today comes from those that play and the others that surround it.
But you chose Love's Labour's Lost, which is not one of the Bard's most popular comedies. Did you see that as a plus?
I think so, and that people don't know it quite as well. And I think we, Alex always jokes that, imagine if we'd done like King Lear the musical.
Will you consider Medea?
I will definitely not consider Medea. I think we also were excited because it's a play really about young people and young people at a sort of crossroads in their lives. And it's wonderful in that it has a lot more women than most Shakespeare plays. So the sexes are a little more equal and just in numbers on stage. So there were a lot of things about the play that really were exciting to us. It also has one of the great endings, I think, of any Shakespeare play.
It's a real twist ending.
It's a real beautiful
twist.
But
I would think that purists would be less upset about you playing fast and loose with this than some of the other.
That's true. I've got to say we've had some Shakespeare scholars. Some of the ones that I sort of am in awe of have come to see the play, and they've been really. Their response has been really exciting, and they've seemed really sort of jazzed by the show. So that's great.
Well, Rachel, have you read the original? Do you feel this captures the spirit
of Shakespeare?
Let's just
say I skimmed it. I knew I should have read it before we ended the run.
It's called research.
I know. I'm lazy. I meant to. I started it. I consider myself a intellectual person, and I have to back off of that entirely. I can't believe I've been busted out on the radio. I didn't read the original.
Well, does the humor of the play feel contemporary to you?
Well, definitely. I mean, my character is this like pompous, stuffy professor. That feels very contemporary. What also feels contemporary to me, and my favorite part of the play probably is all the guys take this oath that they're going to swear off women, and then they each have
drinking,
and they each have their little sonnet moment, and then they each get busted out by everybody, and that feels very contemporary. The part where they're all busting out each other.
And Shakespeare had a lot of fun writing those sonnets because they are. I mean, he was a great sonnet writer, and these are some of the worst sonnets ever.
Yeah, they're really cruel. They're very, for someone who was writing at that time, he was writing all the sonnets, basically. And to write, these are cruel parodies of really awful sonnets. And there's a lot of pleasure to be taken in all the bad poetry in Love's Labour's Lost. These people, because a lot, even, I think, one of the great things about Holofernes and Nathaniel is they may be pompous, but they love academia, and I actually think Shakespeare, and I hope Alex and I really have great respect for these scholars, even if sometimes they're a little bit pompous, that in the end, academia is the protection of text and the love of learning and knowledge, and that in this play is not something that Shakespeare is making fun of.
Although Shakespeare has said it in this invented kingdom of Navarre, you've said it in a New England college during the five-year reunion of a group of young men. Why that setting?
I think we felt that the Ivory Tower is obvious. The contemporary Ivory Tower is the equivalent for sort of Shakespeare's like academic retreat, and that there's something about the 5-year reunion for a play that's very much about young people trying to grow up. We were inspired, I think, a lot by movies like Kicking and Screaming and Whit Stillman's Metropolitan, and these movies about kids who really need to start behaving like adults but still can't quite give up. And anyone who's been to a 5-year reunion knows that it is the place. There's a great moment where this character Barone runs into sort of his old classmate Armado, and Barone always thinks that he was way cooler than Armado, and then at the end Armado's like, I hope you find someone to be with in your life. I mean, I'm sure you won't die alone. And it's this horrible moment. Anyone who's been to reunion has had a moment where someone totally undermines you that way.
My guests are Michael Friedman, who composed the music and the lyrics for this adaptation of Shakespeare's Love's Labour's Lost that is currently at the Delacorte Theatre in Central Park. Rachel Dratch is a member of the cast, which also includes several Broadway veterans, Daniel Breaker of Passing Strange, Colin Donnell from Anything Goes and Jersey Boys, Rebecca Naomi Jones from American Idiot, a number of the former cast members of Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. Did they have any tips for you, Rachel?
Well, I mean, they're doing their thing and I'm doing my thing. Like, they're these amazing singers. So I was just in awe. You know, it's one thing to see these professionals when you're watching from the audience, but when you're standing 5 feet away from them in the rehearsal room, you're just, I mean, my jaw is on the floor. So, you know, we each have our different roles, I'd say. I mean, not literally, but figuratively.
I think one of the great one thing we learned in Bloody Bloody that I actually think we've continued to work on this show and I actually feel even more successfully is that we have people from almost so many different backgrounds and so many different experiences. And what's been really amazing is the generosity with which they all are excited to see each other's talents and also to learn from each other. And so it feels like we've been lucky to be able to create a room in which a lot of mutual respect and also very, very different kinds of performers all sort of unified in one show.
But there is also a lot of fun in this, and I suspect people get caught up in that. There are a lot of references to Broadway musicals, which I won't give away. And was that important to include the in-jokes? They are not that in-joke.
Yeah,
the audience gets all the jokes.
I was going to say, I hope they're not in-jokes. I think of them more as... I think this, you know, it's a show about people who are in love with love and in love with and that love makes them burst into song. And in some ways, I think these are the references are less parodies or than they are just you sort of, you know, homages. And I hope the audience enjoys all those moments. They're there, as sort of little gifts to the audience.
Rachel, the outdoor setting always presents unusual challenges for the cast. Anne Hathaway, I remember, talked about having a raccoon jump into her lap at one point. There's also the heat, rain, sirens, and the night I was there, there had been a mugging in the park, and so a helicopter was circling.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a bit distracting. Have you ever performed conditions like that before?
No, I haven't. I mean, I have yet to see a raccoon, though, which I was, you know,
really?
Hoping for.
We've had a few raccoons.
Really?
We've been better about not having food backstage.
Okay.
I think that's really the solution.
Yeah, I wasn't out on stage for the helicopter, but, you know, it was right at the beginning when all the premise is being laid out for the show, so it was a little... And then at the very end of that same show, when at this poignant moment, there was a baby screaming and crying in the same show. But, no, I mean, generally, it's been fine. Like, there's been the threat of rain every night, but we've been managing to go on. So, actually, I think when it looks rainy out is a good time to line up because there's fewer people there competing for tickets.
In a play like this, where there are so many different kinds of characters, including a Latin lover, that probably presented a lot more opportunities for you to play with musical genres than you could have done in Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson.
Yeah, the score is all over the map in a way, and I think that I had a lot of fun with that. Yeah, and certainly the world of Armado and the world of Jacquinetta, and then the world of the pedants and the lovers is sort of an opportunity for all that stuff. And I hope at the end it all comes together. I feel like towards the end there's sort of some opportunities for then finally everybody gets to sing it as one.
You did write the lyrics for most of the songs, but Shakespeare wrote the lyrics for a few?
How do I say this without sounding dumb? Shakespeare is really, it's really fun to collaborate with Shakespeare in that there is like every time you need a good turn of phrase, there is one hiding somewhere in there. I mean, it's like an inexhaustible font of amazing language. And in this show, because of, as you mentioned earlier, the boys all have their sonnets, which are straight from Shakespeare, and then... at the end, there's this song, The Owl and the Cuckoo, and Barone's big speech has become this song, Are You a Man? And that's mostly Shakespeare. So I tried to use Shakespeare as much as possible, and then once in a while just wrote my own lyrics, and we'll hope people will forgive me for that.
And we're going to be playing Are You a Man?
Oh, great.
To go out with. But just one more thing, the show is scheduled to end on August 18th. A lot of work for something of such a limited run. Other Shakespeare in the Park productions have moved to Broadway, most recently Merchant of Venice. Rachel, if that opportunity pops up, can you and some of the other cast members imagine going to Broadway with it?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that would be amazing. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but of course, I'm sure we would all participate.
Meanwhile, we have just a few more days to see this play in this new version at the Delacorte in Central Park, a play that has one of the most difficult titles to say three times in a row.
It's where
Love's
to put
Labor's
the, it's,
Lost.
It's where to put the apostrophes.
Yeah,
it's really difficult.
People have debated over the years of whether we have an apostrophe in Labor's, right?
Exactly.
Thank you both so much for being on our show.
Thank you, good sir.
So
Michael Friedman, Rachel Dratch, Shakespeare, Love's Labor's Lost, until the 18th of this month. Are you there? It's just a